Hello everyone, this is Lynn Goods. Amazon delivers first UK parcels by drone in Darlington. Amazon has become the first retailer in the UK to launch a drone delivery service, beginning with a limited rollout in Darlington, County Durham. The service allows packages weighing under £5, including everyday items like beauty products, batteries and cables, to be delivered within a 7.5 mile radius of Amazon's local fulfilment centre. The company believes there is strong demand for ultra-fast delivery and plans to expand the service gradually over time. Farmer Rob Shield, who hosted early test runs on his land, said the technology quickly moved from novelty to practicality. "Initially, it was a novelty, so we were ordering everything under the sun," he told the BBC. "Pens, paper, chocolates, anything to make it keep coming." He added, "Since then, you obviously start realising, I actually need something today, like tape measures and stuff like that you're always losing. We just order it and it comes," he told the BBC. Deliveries arrive in small parcels, roughly the size of a shoebox, which are lowered from a height of about 12 feet into customers' gardens or yards. Amazon has spent more than a decade developing its drone delivery technology and remains confident that customers are ready for it. "The certainty is people have never told us they want their stuff slower," said David Carbon, Vice President of Amazon Prime Air. And he told the BBC, "If you've got kids and you want fever medication, you want it. You don't want to drive to the store," he told the BBC. In the UK, drones currently deliver within 2 hours, though Carbon said the average delivery time in the US is around 36 minutes. The service is still limited in scale. Amazon expects to carry out up to 10 flights per hour, or around 100 deliveries per day on weekdays. The drones being used, Amazon's latest MK30 model, are equipped with sensors to detect and avoid obstacles such as washing lines, trampolines, people, and other aircraft. Using GPS, they can identify precise drop-off points and release packages accurately. Despite the technological progress, challenges remain. Dr. Anna Jackman, an associate professor of geography at the University of Reading, said drone deliveries are harder to implement in densely populated urban areas. "A lot of our demand for delivery services is in urban centres. They are very densely populated and congested. And the reality is drone deliveries don't work well in high-rise buildings." She added, "While there are ideas to develop rooftop deliveries and centrally located hubs, right now we're not there yet. For now, customers in Darlington must have access to a suitable outdoor space, such as a garden, to receive deliveries. Drone technology is already being tested in other sectors. The NHS has trialled drones to transport blood supplies in London, while Royal Mail has used them to deliver parcels to remote communities in Orkney. For drone deliveries to become widespread, companies must be able to operate beyond the visual line of sight. Amazon has received approval to do this in Darlington, with drones monitored remotely by operators who can coordinate with air traffic control at nearby Teesside Airport. Darlington was chosen as the UK test site because it offers a mix of residential areas, major roads and proximity to an airport, all within a compact area near an Amazon fulfilment centre. The project is still in its early stages. It currently operates under a Civil Aviation Authority trial, which runs until the end of the year. temporary protected airspace has been granted to support the programme, with permissions expected to be extended. Darlington Borough Council said the scheme had been given temporary planning approval due to its experimental nature, allowing the concept to be tested before any long-term decisions are made. It's great to see Darlington at the forefront of such a pioneering scheme, which highlights our borough as an area of innovation, development and investment, a council spokesperson told the BBC. Amazon had originally planned to launch the service sooner, but delays pushed back its rollout. Despite this, the company maintains that drone delivery has strong commercial potential. "We wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't commercially viable," Carbon told the BBC. "It's a business, and that's the goal we're going after."
Evil prison guard who attacked boys at Kirk Levington exposed. A barbaric prison officer who attacked hundreds of terrified boys at a torture camp detention centre has been exposed by the Northern Echo for the first time. Sadistic Douglas Harrison handed out daily brutality to boys as young as 14 at the former Kirk Levington Detention Centre in Yarm between the 1960s and 1990s. It can be revealed a staggering 273 men reported the evil 74-year-old who died in 2019 to the police, but the total number could exceed 400. The institution, now HMP Kirk Levington, is now the centre of an abuse scandal after police were swamped with almost 1,000 complaints of historic abuse. Victims who had their childhood ripped away have been fighting for justice for decades, but despite Cleveland Police Operation Magnolia marking its 12-year anniversary, not one abuser has been dragged before the courts to answer for their actions. The Northern Echo can exclusively reveal that Harrison was set to be charged by police with misconduct in a public office and numerous assaults, but died in 2019, just days beforehand. After months of investigation by the Echo, Cleveland Police has now taken the almost unprecedented step of naming Harrison as a suspect, saying he was due to be charged with offences relating to 18 victims. Those who allegedly suffered abuse at the hands of Harrison would pray for his day off, with one claiming he left him with a black eye, made him scrub floors with soap he was allergic to, and would get double the abuse if he dared to tell his parents. Another said Harrison smashed his knee with a kitchen paddle so severely that he was hospitalised and left with a limp for the rest of his life. But decades later, the boys, some of whom would cry themselves to sleep, blinded by fear of officer attacks, have still not been able to get justice. Senior Investigating Officer Detective Chief Inspector Chatterton said the force understands the length of the investigation is both upsetting and frustrating and remains fully committed to listening to victims and survivors. Harrison, who was from Stanley but lived in Eaglescliffe, died on September the 22nd, 2019, at the University Hospital of North Tees following a long illness. Police have confirmed that 938 victims have come forward in the probe, 120 of which were in the last 14 months, and have interviewed at least 12 suspects. Jamie Linsell, who was 15 years old when he was sent to Kirk Levington in 1985, claimed Harrison would stamp on his hand with his steel-toed capped boots. He said, "Once when I was scrubbing the floor, he stamped on my hand with his steel-toed boots on. I had an infection, and then I got brayed again, as he said, I was trying to get out of the gym." Lance Mannock, who was 16 during his six-week stint at the centre in 1978, described Harrison as an evil sod. The 64-year-old claims Harrison is the reason he has had a limp for his entire life after smashing his knee with a kitchen paddle. He also said Harrison told others to hold his hand down why he burnt him with a big spoon from a pan of boiling water. Mark Armstrong, who was 14 at his time at Kirk Leamington in 1980, claimed Harrison would abuse 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds and 16-year-olds to make himself feel stronger and harder. The now 62-year-old said Harrison dying before being charged was just another complete failure for the victims. Says he feels like police are going to let them all die. DCI Chatterton said, "Firstly, I want to recognise the profound trauma and distress that all survivors have experienced and acknowledge the courage it has taken to come forward. I understand that the length of time this investigation has taken is upsetting and frustrating, and we are deeply mindful of the impact this has had and continues to have on those affected. We remain fully committed to listening to victims and survivors, treating them with dignity and respect, and pursuing all reasonable lines of inquiry. This is a complex and non-recent investigation involving 938 victims and survivors to date. At least 21 suspects have been interviewed as part of this work, and we continue to work closely with the Crown Prosecution Service. Victim and survivor care and support remain at the heart of everything we do. We encourage anyone affected to continue engaging with their appointed support services, and we are committed to keeping victims and survivors informed as the investigation progresses." A Ministry of Justice spokesperson said, "Our thoughts remain with the friends and families of those affected. Child abuse is abhorrent, and we commend the bravery of victims who come forward. It would be inappropriate to comment further while a police investigation is ongoing. Kirk Leamington Detention Centre was operated by the Home Office, now the Ministry of Justice, and housed boys aged 14 to 17, sentenced to between 3 and 4 months of detention. It changed to an adult male resettlement prison, as it is known today, in 1992. Anyone who suffered abuse at Kirk Leamington Detention Centre can report this to Cleveland Police. Victims can also contact Oakwood solicitors for advice on legal claims."
Durham PCC Joy Allen on stopping criminal gangs using high streets. PCC Joy Allen explains in her own words why she is continuing to push for action against organised crime so that high streets can be places of pride, safety and opportunity and not a cover for crime and disorder. "Walk down any high street in County Durham and Darlington and you will see proud local businesses operating at the heart of their local communities. But increasingly there is another reality, one that many people do not see, but I have witnessed firsthand when I accompanied regional crime and trading standard officers. Some of these shops are a cover for serious and organised crime. A recent operation in Darlington resulted in hundreds of illegal vapes and illicit cigarettes being seized from mini markets. These are not isolated incidents. They are part of a much bigger picture where criminal gangs are operating on high streets up and down the country, exploiting loopholes, undercutting honest traders and putting many lives at risk. This is not just about counterfeit goods. It is about dangerous, unregulated products being sold to our children. It is about modern slavery, vulnerable people forced to work behind the scenes, unseen, unheard and often unpaid. It is about money laundering, drugs and organised criminal networks using so-called legitimate businesses as a front. Every illegal vape sold, every packet of illicit tobacco, every exploited worker hidden from view carries a human cost. These businesses are damaging our economy, eroding trust and confidence, and undermining the safety and security of our neighbourhoods. That is why this issue sits firmly within my police crime and justice plan, under our commitments to safer neighbourhoods, safer business and safer people, safer places. Because safe communities are not just about visible policing, they are about tackling the hidden harms that sit beneath the surface. We know what works. Evidence-led, data-driven, problem-solving, partnership approaches between police, trading standards, HMRC and others. Trading standards officers play a critical role in uncovering illicit supply chains, seizing illegal goods, and building the intelligence needed to dismantle organised crime groups and bring those responsible to justice. The government has recognised thousands of these businesses are linked to criminality and hundreds more to serious organised crime. To combat this concerning trend, they have invested £45 million to create the High Streets Illegality Task Force. But funding alone will not solve this issue. We need sustained investment, stronger powers, and better intelligence sharing to stay ahead of increasingly sophisticated networks. And we need you with us. If something does not feel right, a shop with no genuine customers, prices that seem too good to be true, staff who appear fearful or controlled, trust your instincts and report it. What can seem to you an insignificant piece of information could be the missing piece in the jigsaw our officers are looking for. As your police and crime commissioner, I will continue to push for action locally and nationally. We cannot allow criminal networks to normalise illegal trade or exploit our communities. Our high streets should be places of pride, safety and opportunity, not a cover for crime and disorder. It is time we tackled serious and organised crime on our high streets head on to help us deliver safer, stronger and more resilient high streets.
County Durham selective licensing scheme to be reviewed. A scheme which aims to crack down on rogue landlords and regulate privately rented properties will be reviewed. Durham County Council agreed to hold a public consultation on its selective licensing scheme to assess whether it should continue. The existing scheme, which has been in place since April 2022 and lasts for 5 years, requires landlords to obtain a licence and to comply with set conditions when renting properties in designated areas of the county. Under the new proposals, the new scheme would cover an estimated 20,000 properties in areas that meet the criteria for selective licensing designated area, covering 27% of the county. Areas which are included in the current scheme but no longer meet the criteria for a designated area would be reviewed from April 2027. Joe Quinn, Cabinet Member for Planning, Investment and Assets, said, "In County Durham, we have a large private rental sector. In some areas, it is estimated that up to 60% of all homes are in the private rental sector. While many of these homes are of good quality, much of the stock is older, not energy efficient, or in need of repair or refurbishment. A key priority of our County Durham housing strategy is to ensure everyone has access to appropriate, safe and secure housing. One way in which we are achieving this is by ensuring effective landlord services through our selective licensing scheme. The local authority will carry out a 10-week engagement exercise on whether the scheme should be continued beyond March 2027. Councillor Quinn added, "Over the last 5 years, the selective licensing scheme has allowed us to work closer with the landlords and provide additional support to ensure their rental properties are of a high standard and meet the needs of residents. It has also allowed us, where needed, to take enforcement action when a landlord has failed to engage with the scheme and not provided safe housing for their tenants. We are now considering building on the current selective licensing scheme and would be seeking views from all members of the community, including landlords, tenants and residents, to ensure that we have a wide range of feedback.